Congratulations.
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
Hey. And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
We're back here again in the old San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. Are we allowed to say that? We're in this conference room. It's pretty comical.
There's these shades, these blackout shades that go down, and it's there, but there's a series of buttons you have to press, and none of them are labeled with any language that makes sense. They're like, there's like a circle on it and four different levels, and you press one and it does this, and then you press like three other times to figure it out. It's really funny.
We were up here turning lights on and off for like 45 minutes.
We finally got this goddamn thing to work.
Recently, we realized that we owe some prizes to some people, and those are coming right along. How long's it been? Not quite a year yet. I think it was just back in October. So we owe some prizes.
Well, it was for the opening of Root Division.
Right. Here at Congratulations Pine Tree, we are introducing a new segment, and this is the Margaret Tedesco Pick of the Week. And Margaret's pick of the week this week is Minette Lehman is in residence at Crow's Work. My pick of the week this week is Amanda Carreri, friend of the show, has a show up over there at Romer Young, just a hop, skip, and a jump from our old pal Minnesota Street Project, which just had the Monster Drawing Rally, which was a tour de force as always.
There's three residents at Crow's Work right now. We have Minette Lehman, Zina El-Shugri, and, four, Sarah Biscaradilli and Eddie Falconer.
I think Sarah's from Black Salt. Cool.
The residency program presents 4 month-long cycles of 3 artists in the space at a time, plus a video by a 4th artist shown in the gallery as well as streamed online. The residency cycle follows the elements air, earth, fire, water, and focuses on 4 concepts: body, altar, sanctuary, and transmission.
Cool.
Right?
Okay, go check that out, everybody. That's over there in Oakland. Oakland's been having a thing lately, Save Oakland Arts. There's been meetings and stuff about trying to save that uptown art district over there where Rock, Paper, Scissors is already gone from.
Yeah.
So keep an eye on that.
That's where Crow's Work is. That's where Crow's Work is, too.
That's right. San Francisco is also having a big thing, a big, you know, Save the Arts in San Francisco thing. Did you see about that, Maysoon? I think Root Division spearheading it.
I didn't see anything about that.
I'll have a link to whatever that's about. I think they had a meeting, and I think it already happened. Mm-hmm. They were trying to do something to get arts funding restored and the hotel tax and all that kind of stuff, get more money for the arts.
Right.
Meanwhile, Airbnb is suing San Francisco or whatever over that. Maysoon is giving the middle finger on both hands, 2 hands with middle finger to Airbnb. I'd like to contribute one middle finger.
If I had a third hand, it would be up.
I have one more middle finger for that. 3 middle fingers from Congratulations Pine Tree to Airbnb. Suing San Francisco's city government over having to get Airbnb hosts to register with the city. I think that was what it was about.
Right.
Also, retroactive pick of the week was the show that was just up at Root Division, which is now down. I should have gotten over there faster to recommend it to everybody because that show was fucking the bomb diggity.
Wow. Bomb diggity. I haven't heard that since like the 90s.
What was it called?
ISO Queer Gods.
Was that what it was called? And that show was curated by Amy Cancelmo and Billy O. Callahan.
Right.
Had art by Nikki Green, Angie Wilson,
Motion Shafi,
Orlando De La Garza. Look at pictures of the show since it's over now. And there was also a little book. And there was a zine fest.
Yeah, I got a zine from someone.
Our old pal UC Berkeley Go Bears has their MFA show up. Doesn't it seem like it should have been up
it's
a month ago?
Late. It's like, we're like about to be in July.
Yeah, so go check it out. You got plenty of time. It opens this Friday.
It opened on Friday?
It's opening on Friday. It hasn't opened yet.
It seems pretty late.
Well, that's cool though, because we didn't miss it. Special congratulations, Pine Tree, congratulations to friends of the show, Michael Hall and Julia Goodman, who just made a blessed vow of eternal love to each other at their wedding over this weekend. Artists, educators, tender lovers. May you have the most glorious of unions for all time.
Yeah.
Want to add to that?
That I just love them both very much, and I'm over the moon. Over the moon about their union.
Over the moonion about their union. Congratulations. All right, this week we got a real hot interview.
Woo!
Coming right up after this brief musical interlude. We're out here in beautiful San Francisco, California. Is this the Bayview neighborhood?
Yes, it is.
Talking to artist Sanaz Mazanani. I wanted to ask, I heard in a lecture or interview or something that you did, that you moved from Iran to Canada when you were 11. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
And then when did you come to the U.S.?
I came here in 2009 to go to graduate school. So I went to Stanford, and that's where I, from there, ended up in San Francisco.
How do you feel about Canada, and do you ever think about going back?
I think about going back all the time, and I really, really love specifically Toronto because I spent about 20 years living there. So it's kind of my home, maybe my first home, and then maybe Iran is my second home, but so far away that I really wouldn't quite fit in there anymore. And then San Francisco is third, but it's like starting to catch up with Toronto, so it's kind of confusing. I just read that Canada is the second, I guess, exporter of arms to the Middle East. So maybe Canada's not as good as I think of it.
Yeah. What the fuck, Canada? That's so weird.
Is it a prime minister in Canada?
Yeah, Justin Trudeau, dream hunk.
Yeah, yeah. People believe in him, and we had a really numbnut for a really long time. Very similar to like your W here, and so it was like anything but. So people were very excited. He's younger. He's much more open to like equality in terms of sexism and whatnot, and in terms of, I guess, human rights in general. But in the end, he's a liberal, and he's center. Yeah.
I'm always interested in knowing like how people would define the difference in like the art world, like here and there. So maybe like you have three locations. What would you say some of the biggest similarities or differences might be between San Francisco, Toronto, and perhaps Tehran?
Yeah. So of course,
you've also shown in all of those places, yeah, multiple times.
Yeah, I've shown in Iran for the very first time in Tehran in February. Mm-hmm. So it was a solo show. I had never been part of like a group show or anything like that there before, and it was really cool because I was there doing the solo, and then there's a big film video animation performing arts festival, and I curated something in it, and I had something in one of the programs as well. So it was just like this, like all the stuff is happening at once, and it was amazing to be part of the art scene in Tehran. I think to describe the cities, one thing is like scale, and its longevity might be two issues to think about. So Toronto is a bigger city. It's almost 4 million now. And its proximity to New York defines it a little bit. San Francisco is smallest out of all three, except it has a probably longer history for arts and activism, social justice, all combined together. So I think that defines it a lot. And then the Iranian art scene is, I guess the Tehran art scene is really diverse. There's quite a lot of incredible craftsmanship in the work because of the history, that the long, very traditional history of art in Iran. Painting has been really big there for a really long time, but right now, because of embargoes and sanctions and whatnot, and limitations for artists to get their work out there, video and photography and animation have like really like taken over, because it's a way to have more access to the larger art world. Mm-hmm. So then you can start to see really interesting work coming in those mediums. So it's all kind of, yeah.
What about like government support for the arts?
Oh, yeah.
and everywhere?
Okay, so here I feel really supported. I feel really lucky to be in San Francisco. I feel like my work is slightly political, like, or more political than, you know, the regular average roster of art out there. And I feel like the granting bodies here, the institutions, welcome that and don't, like, hold back funds or support from artists who have something to say, which I really, really appreciate. In Canada, of course, you get paid for every single show. Like, there's no, like, $100 honoraria. Like, you get, like, $1,800, you know, minimum for a solo show. And that's also dependent on the institution's, like, annual budget and stuff like that. But that's what it is usually. And then a group show, like, will just divide from there. So if there's, like, three people in the show, the 1,800 is, like, divided by three and so forth. And then, like, shipping always. Most of the time, flights are taken care of, if possible. And then there's multiple levels of government funding, so national and provincial or statewide, like you have here, that cover, like, travel outside the country and for shows elsewhere to make sure that the artists of that community get to show their work elsewhere and have opportunities for growth. And then in Tehran, there's nothing like that. There's a lot of public art, though. And then the public art is has to be in line with the standards of the theocracy government that's in place. So there's only so much you can say over there in terms of that stuff.
Can Americans get funding from Canada?
Well, if you have a show in Canada, you're going to get paid, right? No, and I really feel like also curators have more time or resources or... I mean, I hate to say it, but I feel like here maybe curators are overworked and, like, the conversations that I have with them are, like, shorter and more to the point and less
more
immersive.
Or, what are you going to do for this show? It's less maybe conversation about ideas. And
Whereas, like, you know, I have curators that I just talk to for, like, years at a time before we do something together. And there's no expectation that something even has to come out of it. Like, it's not about, like, an end goal. It's more about a process. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's more, like, just a... I don't know what that is actually about. I don't know if that's a West Coast, East Coast, because there's also that. It's not just the countries. It's like if you compare, like, New York to L.A. or to San Francisco, there's similarities and differences, I think, depending on that.
So I was doing some homework about you. There was one point where I was like, is she a photographer? Because I feel like I've always looked at your work as more installation based and, like, multimedia. And I guess I just wanted to have you tell us, like, how do you define or describe your own practice, you know?
Yeah, so I think basically I studied, my undergrad was in photography. I went to an art school very similar to SFAI, and it was going through some crazy transitional times. So I got to, like, experiment and mess around and play with a lot of different materials. But I graduated with, like, an AOCAD in photography, which was my degree. When I came here, one of the reasons I chose Stanford was because it offered a multidisciplinary practice. And I really wanted to allow myself to learn more about other media, because I just really, really love gaining understanding of materials and kind of learning something new. And especially I find it a little bit tiring with photography that it's so much now, like, digital or, like, just clean and there's no mess to it. So I like doing a little bit, like, more physical work. So, and I think that what was really wonderful about actually coming here is some faculty, in particular, some incredible curators in the Bay Area who allowed me to work in new media, new media to me, before, like, me having any real experience doing it before. So that's what I really, I got lucky that way, coming here, out here.
Yeah.
And then, but still, if you even look around here in the studio, my work is photo-based.
Yeah.
And the reason that I use imagery in my work is because I think that actually my subject is often about photography and the way that Images allow us to perceive ourselves, how visibility is achieved by different groups, and how photography in this kind of crazy selfie, tablet, screen-based world informs us about what life is and what life is particularly like elsewhere that we've never been.
Do you think it's a bad thing that we have so much image glut, like the constant influx of images? Maybe that's too simplistic of a,
no,
it's
I
a
mean,
false
I,
dichotomy.
I don't think it's a bad thing. Like, I think it's something we need to acknowledge, though, and maybe kind of think about it, the propagation of images and how one photograph will duplicate and, like, just go viral, right, let's say, right? Or now videos as well, but it's all the kind of image-based. And how, what is the system within which certain images will achieve that, and which images end up never being seen, and which images are not even being captured? So there's just like all of those things that's what's interesting. And because there's such an incredible amount of images out there, it actually, you know, and it surrounds us so much, I think it just becomes more important to, like, look at those issues.
You were doing a project right about when George Bush the first wouldn't let people, like, photograph the bringing back dead soldiers from Desert Storm. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. In 1991, during the Gulf War, the Kuwait War and stuff like that, George Bush Sr. Made it illegal to have images of fallen soldiers, wounded soldiers, or the coffins coming back be represented in any news media or whatnot. So what happened is that these images of loss of life of American soldiers just stopped being part of the public consciousness. At the time, I was kind of young. I wasn't really making art. I was just kind of like skipping rope or something like that. What happened was in 2005, there was a university professor who, through the Freedom of Information Act, made a request to have these images that have been always been taken by staff photographers be released for like internal documentation.
Right.
So the Department of Defense finally released them, except they redacted like major parts of the image. So like, faces are blacked out, all sorts of like insignia, identification, exactly. All captions were removed, so that this some kind of like about 500 images that were released, like you couldn't even tell if these were like soldiers and coffins coming back from Afghanistan or Iraq. And so they were printed in the media, but then really soon after it was kind of dissipated because there's really not that much to look at in these images.
Yeah.
And so it really made me think about what is a photograph? I mean, how important is the documentary element of a photograph in giving it credibility or interest? And how does an image kind of merit value? So, yeah, these are things I think about.
Mm-hmm. That when was that overturned or whatever?
It kind of continues because in 2009, February, Obama made like remove that law so you could publish images, but he required that every single soldier pictured in each image have consent also. And also family consent, if like they've passed away or not, whatnot, kind of rendering it like rather impossible to get that accomplished and published.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a loophole solution or whatnot.
Giving consent for a photograph seems so like not even secondary to all the other things that a family or a soldier is agreeing to have
so
done to
these
them.
These are in particular like procession photographs of like the soldiers coming back home, let's say from Iraq, the flag draped coffins being carried by other soldiers and whatnot. And so what I think is kind of the real issue is the lack of conversation and again that kind of proliferation of images. So if we're like looking at like tons of pictures of help me out, like Kim Kardashian, right? Versus these images. So we're going to be thinking more about Kim Kardashian than dead people because of war.
Right?
And that's like really the kind of thing that I worry about, because there's just so much control over what we get to see about everything that goes on around us.
Yeah.
So this is basically a really long-winded answer to your question as to if I'm a photographer or not, because it really, it's that's why I end up using photographs a lot, because I'm like trying to talk about this.
And you're mostly sourcing photos from the web, not necessarily taking your own.
Yeah. So I've I'm basically stopped taking photographs for a while. I actually do take them all the time, but I've stopped using them in my own work. And that comes to the fact that there's just so much out there already, and I want to talk about and rejuxtapose the images that we're already consuming. So I don't feel like I need to add to it.
Yeah, there's plenty out there.
Yeah.
And you're also using like design elements from like Islamic ornamentation and things like that.
Yeah, so basically somewhere along the line of me trying to make work that was a little bit difficult, that was maybe about death and injustice, I realized that people don't really want to be brought down so often, and it's just like, you know, we all enjoy being happy and living happy, you know, carefree lives. So I realized that I kind of
the internet makes us feel that way, I think.
Yeah, like puppies and stuff, right? So I was just thinking I needed to insert some beauty into the work to kind of like a hook or a catch.
It's very deceptive.
So from far away, usually when you look at my work, you're like, oh, it's so pretty. What a nice pattern. And then when you get close, there's like a little bit of a punch. And that's the strategy. And I use Islamic ornamentation, that kind of patterning, in particular after this trip that I took to Iran. I was actually taking my Canadian-American husband to Iran for the first time.
Aww.
Yeah, and we went to like all of these incredible architectural sites and just looking at all these. And then I came back and I started making these patterns. So that was like really intuitive. And then I realized, hey, these patterns actually are creating this kind of hook that I need. And so I decided to stick with it. And then the beauty of these patterns, Islamic ornamentation, the philosophy behind it is also important to me. It comes from this concept of the transitory nature of being, so that when you look at a pattern, you realize that this is of this world. It's something that like is man-made and physical. But at the same time, looking into the pattern, and it's kind of like the way a mandala works, or kind of a meditation with patterns that are repeating work, it allows you to maybe take your mind to somewhere else. And so historically, these patterns have been put on carpets and vessels and walls and mosques and tiles and stuff like that, to allow people to kind of trigger the potential and the possibility of something else. So again, historically it was more like a heaven versus earth kind of idea, but I try to use it as like a more secular referent, so that we're kind of imagining like a better world, you know, and a potential for something else.
I feel like it's hard a lot, and we've talked about in earlier episodes about making work that has like a message or like political content, but that also is like very aesthetic and like visually pleasing, and how it's kind of sometimes hard to ride that line.
Right. And it doesn't have to be like both for everyone, right? Like it could be totally aesthetic for like everyone and I'd still be happy, you know, because for me, like, I've made a work with that idea behind it. And so for me, if it's like, you know, 1 in 100 people like experience it that way, I'm perfectly happy because that one person experienced it that way.
This is kind of about audience and in two directions, how your audience's change or audience expectation changes based on where you're showing your work, like in, as we were talking about earlier, the three sort of different places where you identify.
Or other places too that you've shown.
But then also this person was asking if you ever feel a need to sort of code switch when you're speaking to different communities, like when Obama, this is a quote, when Obama speaks to a black community versus a white community.
Or like Hillary. So basically, I don't change my work because my work is like the work that I've made. But the context definitely changes the way that people experience the work. So if someone's seeing something different and asking me different questions about it, then it's going to be a different conversation for sure. Mm-hmm. And I find that the biggest difference is like I've given a lot of talks in Iran. I've never just exhibited. It was my only time to exhibit this last time. Mm-hmm. But in the past, every time I go, I always give a lecture. And those lectures are always way more hardcore, and people are like into talking about war, and like there's a lot of people interested in just talking about like writers and like kind of the philosophy and the kind of more in-depth like psychological issues around the loss of life. So we'll end up like just discussing like Judith Butler's like Frames of War. Mm-hmm. Whereas here I find that if I'm like making a point, I need to take a break, talk about something lighter, and then maybe circle back to it again, or else people just like really don't appreciate me. Mm. Yeah. And I respect that. It's just like really interesting that like sometimes I get tired if I'm giving a talk in Iran because I'm like, can we not just talk about war? Can we talk about other yeah. things too? So it's like really interesting because there's this like consciousness about it because the Iran-Iraq war ended in 1988, right? So there like people who are my age like remember the war. Mm-hmm. And there's tons of people who lost family members and or someone that they know. So the consciousness of like the loss of life and the kind of suffering and this huge kind of anti-war mentality there, or pro-peace mentality, is really wide, and there's definitely still need for healing. Whereas here, I think in the States and in Canada as well, you know, the memory of like war on the soil here hasn't really happened in our living memories, right? And so there's definitely a different need for conversations too for different audiences.
So we always like to ask our interviewees if there's anything else you would like listeners to know.
Oh wow. I have SF Camera Works, but it's like next year, February, so that's a while from now. And then I have two shows, group shows coming up in Canada, which I'm getting paid for.
Lucky dog.
Sorry.
Awesome. Love it.
I don't know how you guys do it. I don't know how you guys survive as artists here yeah. in the Bay Area or like anywhere in the States unless you're super duper commercial.
Or unless like, you have a trust fund.
Or someone supporting you.
Yeah, but it just seems like that's got to change. It really has to. I mean, like, there's, like, really good organizations who I've worked with who are like, we're doing this show. It's about, like, you know, global activism and, you know, identity politics and minorities and, like, you know, women's rights. But we're not going to pay you. It's like what? What? And... But then it's like an amazing opportunity and you want to be part of it and you want to be in dialogue with your peers who are just amazing. Yeah. And then you're just like, okay, I guess I'll just do this for the sake of it. And I just feel like this...
In those situations... Sorry to interrupt you.
No, I'm just saying that the lack of like respect for the labor of intellectual labor and our physical work of making yeah. art is just unbelievable to me
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
Do you ever, in those situations, do you, in your own way, confront the institution around that? Like, do you?
I have quietly a couple of times and then regretted it. But yeah, well, so I'm an outward person. Like, I kind of don't hold back. If I think something is not appropriate, I do speak up. And I think that there's something really beautiful in the Bay Area where people are just really kind and generally don't say the negative thing, even though they might feel it or think it. But I don't really have the ability to censor that way. So I have a few times. And it's always been like the curator who had to step in and be like, oh, okay, like, I'll like, you know, get you a check from my, like, you know, research funding or something like that, or something, you know, or from my like book buying budget. I don't know where they get it from, but and it just seems totally unfair, because then what's happening is that like the buck is being passed to the curator and still not the institution dealing with it. So the couple of times that I've brought it up where this has come up, where it was actually like zero payment, not because it was like a small honorarium, but there was like just no acknowledgement of paying an artist for their work, it's always been the curator that had to step in and like say, like, you know, do the right thing, and the institution hasn't taken the responsibility. So I don't know how, what's the worth of then just seeming like an ungrateful artist, which is not what I'm trying to do, but just trying to speak up for
the arts. But doesn't the curator know? I mean, don't they have some say in what the budget is in some of these places? I mean, it seems false to think that they're completely unconnected to that.
And also the curator has more contact with like being able to like spur institutional change in their own institution than you would as the artist.
Yeah, but I guess maybe in those cases they're like, you know, some kind, like maybe a faculty has been a curator for an institution, so they're not really curators. Yeah, or like independent curators and stuff like that. It's just because the system's not set up properly, that's all.
Yeah.
I wouldn't blame like the individual parties or people. I mean,
Kate and I were talking about this, have been talking about this recently. I just think it's like a priority thing. It's like a, you know, what's the priority on the part of the institution? It's like, are you supporting artists or are you not, you know?
Well, the question I always ask is, what's the reason that this institution exists, you know?
Yes.
Like, are you there to show amazing art and provide programming for your public? Who is providing the content of that artwork or that programming? It's your artist. So basically, the two real, like, groups involved are your patrons or your visitors and your artists who are providing the intellectual and visual work. So you have to respect them equally. And your institution wouldn't exist without artists.
Yay, loved it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with us today. And as always, congratulations.
Aw, thank you. Thank you for coming out to my studio.
If anybody has questions for our next guest to the show, Eric Parra, painter and educator, among many other things, be sure to get it to us very quickly, like today, the day this episode goes up, and we can ask him that. I'd like some real technical questions.
Can you put a Facebook post up?
Yeah. And if you have questions for us, we always welcome that. 419-351-6606. You can call or text that number. Or you can email us, congratulationspinetree@gmail.com. You can tweet us at Pine Tree Podcast. We got a Facebook page now.
Oh,
it's like, I forget how you get to it. I think you go to like facebook.com/Pine Tree Podcast or something.
Okay.
I don't know how that works. Just search it on Facebook. And remember, our website, congratulationspinetree.com.
Doesn't that sound ridiculous, all of that?
I like listing.
You like listing it all out?
Making lists, not like walking in a zigzag. Sometimes if you're listing, you're kind of veering off to the side.
Oh, I see.
Also, I want to put a plug in for Radical Art Theory Tuesdays at Southern Exposure, which has been put together by a friend of the show and friend of myself, C.A. Greenlee. That's a great program they got going over there, and I missed it this last week, unfortunately, but definitely planning on making it to the next one. Come on out and learn the other side of art theory. Not the canon, but the really legit, radical shit. Sometimes lectures, sometimes workshops. Head on by, you don't know what you're going to get.
I did want to plug the show at Mills right now, which is the culmination of a 6-month residency program. Three artists, incredible show. The space is beautiful, really well installed, I think. The work on view is by Surabhi Serif, Carrie Hott, and KRM Mooney.
Highly recommended. Yeah. Everyone in the whole tri-state
really
area. Do we have a tri-state area?
No, fuck that shit.
If we did, though, it would be Nevada, Oregon, California.
And
that's three tri-state.
I think, oh yeah, okay, fine. As if there's other states that touch our borders. What's the word?
In the dual country? The dual country area.
Can we be a die country?
No, that sounds a little violent.
D-I?
No. We're the live country.
Bi
country, I could get it down with. Anyway, also, speaking of bi country, we've got a queer art history trivia night coming up next Wednesday, July 6th at 6:30 at Royal Nunsuch Gallery.
Do it. It's going to be fun.
Also, speaking of all that, if anybody wants to come by, I'm doing reading aloud from 1 to 4 Saturdays and Sundays for the next 2 weekends at Royal Nunsuch Gallery. Haven't been getting too many visitors.
I'm going to come by.
Come on by. I'll read to you.
Just sit there and listen to you read to us. What are you reading?
If someone I know comes, I usually stop and chit-chat.
But what are you reading?
I'm reading mainly like queer art theory.
Oh.
I'm trying to find some theoretical writings that have like blowjoes and, you know, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Fisting and what have you.
Why is that? Why are you looking for that?
A little more exciting.
Okay.
Trying to deviate from the canon. So, thanks for listening. Really waiting for some listener feedback.
Can I plug a side project? Okay, listeners, I want to make this video, a Bay Area dance exquisite corpse video, but I need some help. Let me know if you're interested in participating.
And you can contact me soon. Do you want to give your just at congratulationspinetree @gmail.com?
I'll filter it. I'll filter through them.
From the bridge
to the other bridge
to the island in between. This has been
Congratulations Pine Tree. Shut the door.